This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Welcome to Science News. We'll explore the latest research and the intersection of science and society. There's always something fascinating to learn in Science News, coming up next on the audio reading service.
Welcome. This is Science News, and I'm your reader, Bill Shaw, with the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today, I'll be reading from the sciencenews.org website, copyright 2025, Society for Science and the Public. And now I'll begin with, from the news of Earth, two of Greece's most dangerous volcanoes share an underground link. A January earthquake swarm exposed shared plumbing between Santorini and Colombo. By Carolyn Gramling. An intense swarm of earthquakes around Greece's Santorini island in January has revealed a fiery underground link between two neighboring and historically explosive volcanoes. Analysis of seismic activity from June 2024 through February 2025, along with changes in the island's surface elevation, suggests that the same well of magma feeding the Santorini volcano may also supply the submerged Colombo volcano. Just 7 kilometers away, researchers report, September 24th in Nature. Complex shared magma plumbing systems can complicate the interpretation of earthquakes and signs of imminent eruption, says Marius Isken, a geophysicist at the GFZ Helmholtz Center for Geosciences in Potsdam, Germany, and colleagues. This study, they say, highlights the need for real-time, high-resolution monitoring to improve volcano warnings. Santorini is known for a catastrophic volcanic eruption around 1560 BC that contributed to the end of the Minoan civilization and caused widespread devastation, including earthquakes, tsunamis, and possibly a volcanic winter. Colombo is no slouch either, erupting most recently in AD 1650, when a swarm of over 1,200 earthquakes rattled the region early this year. Greece declared a state of emergency, fearing an imminent eruption. Although no eruption ensued, the abundant quakes allowed Isken and colleagues to examine the subsurface and better understand how and where magma moved. Using data from earthquake stations on both land and the seafloor, the team reconstructed the events leading to the unrest. Starting in July 2024, Santorini's surface began to swell by a few centimeters, suggesting magma accumulation in its shallow reservoir from deeper in Earth's crust. The swelling coincided with seismic activity centered around Santorini. On January 27th, the earthquake rate surged with a new swarm of quakes migrating over several weeks, first toward Santorini and then northeast away from the island. At the same time, GPS data showed that both volcanoes seemed to deflate. The story told in quakes and ground settling suggests that magma from a deeper crustal reservoir feeds both Santorini and Colombo. The swarm of seismicity points to magma moving from this reservoir initially toward Santorini and then away from both volcanoes, causing them both to deflate like a simultaneous sigh. This is the first observation of a magmatic connection between Colombo and Santorini, the team notes, and that has implications for other large volcanic systems, hypothesized to share magmatic plumbing or at least to jostle one another underground, such as those in Hawaii, Iceland, and Russia's Kamchatka Peninsula. And now from the news of tech. This experimental computer chip reuses energy. If the technology can be scaled up, it could help make AI cheaper and more efficient. By Catherine Hulick. An experimental computer chip called Ice River can reuse the energy put into it, researchers say. A regular computer chip cannot reuse energy. All the electrical energy it draws to perform computations immediately becomes useless heat. Your phone or laptop will use energy once and then throw it away, says Michael Frank, a scientist at Vare Computing, the London company where the new test chip was made. When your device is working hard, you can feel the warmth of all that wasted energy. In data centers, large amounts of water and hard-working fans keep computers from overheating. AI demands powerful computer chips that draw more electricity than those in the past. As the technology proliferates, the environmental and energy costs of computing keep on rising. The new chip tested in August drew around 30% less energy than a regular chip performing the same computation. The system was reusing a portion of its electrical energy instead of wasting it as heat. Quote, "This is quite exciting, says Atmesh Srivastava, a computer engineer at Northeastern University in Boston. Quote, "We all want a computing system where we can recover energy," end quote. To develop Ice River, Frank and the team at Vare reimagined two inefficient features of modern computer chips. First, chips sold now waste energy by erasing information. A typical chip's logic, the circuitry and rules that determine the way the chip processes information, only works in one direction. When you do a computation, the original ones and zeros are erased, generating heat. Ice River instead uses reversible logic, which allows it to uncompute and get the original information back. This avoids losing heat to erasures. Second, modern chips waste energy when their voltage rapidly changes. Like a hammer coming down, the power supply slams ones into zeros or vice versa. This allows for very fast computation, but those rapid changes give off heat. In contrast, Ice River uses an approach called adiabatic computing, in which voltages gradually go up and down. Quote, "You can think of the energy as sloshing back and forth," Frank says. "It's more like a pendulum than a hammer. The system can partly keep itself going and reuse energy in the next operations. Importantly, the power supply doing all this is housed on the chip itself." Computer scientists have known since the 1960s that this sort of system was theoretically possible. In the 1990s at MIT, Frank worked on test systems that showed reversible logic working, but Ice River is the first physical chip to combine reversible logic with a pendulum-like power supply on board, he says. With just one or the other, Frank says, you can't reuse a meaningful amount of energy. The August test was an important proof of concept before that moment, says Vare co-founder Hannah Early. Quote, "I've been sketching the chip on paper and running it in simulation," end quote. She was thrilled to finally see Ice River work in real life. Eric De Benedictus, who runs the computing company Zeta Flops in Albuquerque, New Mexico, says Vare is, quote, "much closer," end quote, to a reversible chip that would be useful in the real world than anybody has come before. However, there's still a long way to go. Quote, "This type of technology will take a long time to become more mainstream," Srivastava says. For one thing, adiabatic computing, quote, "is a slow process," he says, "because these chips don't heat up like usual ones. You can pack them more closely together to make up for the slower speed, but that ups the cost. Vare will need to find ways to scale up effectively and to reuse even more energy." Quote, "They have a challenge ahead of them," De Benedictus says. Next, from the news of physics, ice is more flexible than you think. A new nano movie shows trapped air bubbles move, merge, and dissolve without fracturing the crystal lattice, by Rachel Berkowitz. In the dog days of summer, popping a tray of water into the freezer to make ice cubes may seem mundane, but at the smallest scales, we still don't know a lot about how freezing unfolds. Now, the first ever molecular scale movies of ice reveal that the resulting crystal is surprisingly flexible. Researchers report September 25th in Nature Communications. The transformation of liquid water into ice is a fundamental process on Earth and beyond. The freezing process and the stability of ice are vital to atmospheric process, transportation safety, and the preservation of biological tissue. To better understand what stabilizes and what weakens ice, materials scientist Jing Shan Du and his colleagues investigated how well ice tolerates structural imperfections and tiny bubbles trapped in its crystalline structure. Watching ice at the nanoscale is incredibly hard. The weak chemical bonds between water molecules can be easily damaged by the energy sources used for atomic scale imaging, such as X-rays and electron beams. Quote, "You need to put a lot of energy into the sample to get atomic level signals," says Du of Pacific Northwest National Laboratory in Richland, Washington. Quote, "It's really difficult to stabilize ice in the conditions you need for imaging," end quote. To overcome these issues, the researchers developed a technique that involved sandwiching liquid water between two protective carbon membranes inside a cryogenic cell. By slowly cooling the cell with liquid nitrogen to negative 180 degrees Celsius, they created an encapsulated ice film less than a few hundred nanometers thick. The team then moved the protected crystal sandwich into a vacuum chamber needed for imaging and captured snapshots in rapid succession using a transmission electron microscope. Then they watched the magic unfold. Nanoscale air bubbles became trapped during freezing. New bubbles also formed, moved, shrank, merged, and dissolved, all within solid ice. Quote, "What's fascinating is that throughout the entire process, ice keeps being a single solid crystal," Du says. Upon further examination, the researchers found that instead of a smooth, curved surface, the bubbles had a zigzag pattern with repeated flat surfaces at the atomic level. Quote, "That's what you'd expect if you give the bubbles enough time to settle down. As the curved bubbles develop facets to stabilize," he explains. Measurements confirmed that these trapped gas bubbles did not strain the ice crystal, which could cause fracturing. Instead, the structure adapted surprisingly well to these defects, unlike other materials such as metals or ceramics. Quote, "Ice is pretty happy with the bubbles," Du says. The reason, he explains, is that water's chemical bonds make it extremely flexible and malleable, even as a solid. Computer simulations confirmed ice's unique tolerance for defects without compromising the crystal's integrity. Quote, "We hope this new insight can guide us in approaches to preventing ice buildup and how it occurs," Du says. "Understanding the dynamics of how ice forms, grows, and recrystallizes is important for developing engineering strategies that could inhibit crystal stabilization on airplane wings, roadways, and other surfaces, as well as during cryopreservation of tissues where crystals could puncture cells and membranes. Finally, the results might help connect the dots in models of glacier behavior where small-scale bubbles impact large-scale melting and movement." Quote, "What we found is that ice is not going to be less stable with bubbles in it," Du says. Jung Won Park, a chemist at Seoul National University who studies nanoscale material dynamics, says it's exciting to see one of the earliest nanomolecular scale images of ice crystals using a new method to shield the ice from the high vacuum imaging environment. His colleagues and fellow chemist Min Young Lee note that the findings provide, quote, "new insight and vast opportunities," end quote, for investigating effects right at the liquid solid surface interface in crystallization. Quote, "We're not watching water freeze into ice just yet," Du says, quote, "but this is the first step toward that," end quote. And now we have an article from the area of health and medicine with little proof. Trump links Tylenol to autism and touts a treatment. Studies on Autism and Tylenol During Pregnancy Don't Prove Cause and Effect by Laura Sanders. Just 6 months ago, the Trump administration promised to find the cause of autism. On September 22nd, top U.S. health officials announced both a cause and a treatment, though neither is on solid scientific footing, and no data were presented to back up the claims. In an hour-long news briefing filled with inaccuracies, President Donald Trump claimed that acetaminophen, commonly sold in the United States as Tylenol, can cause autism, and repeatedly told pregnant people not to take it. And he claimed a drug called leucovorin, a form of folinic acid used to help counter the toxicity of chemotherapy, can treat symptoms. Quote, "We're going to save a lot of children from a tough life, a really tough life. We're going to save a lot of parents from a tough life," Trump said. Yet evidence is scant that acetaminophen, a widely available drug for fever and pain, has any relationship to autism, much less that the drug can cause autism. And it's too soon to say whether the drug leucovorin holds promise, many autism experts say. Quote, "The data cited do not support the claim that Tylenol causes autism and leucovorin is a cure and only stoke fear and falsely suggest hope when there is no simple answer." End quote. The Coalition of Autism Scientists, a group of more than 250 autism researchers, said in a statement, "Autism rates are rising. As of 2022, an estimated 1 in 31 kids were diagnosed with autism by the time they were 8. The Trump administration has claimed that this evidence must be driven by some sort of toxin or exposure, despite evidence that increased awareness and screening are behind the rise. The relationship between acetaminophen and autism is one of those potential exposures that's been studied. A recent review of scientific literature published August 14th in BMC Environmental Health describes studies that found an association between acetaminophen during pregnancy and later risk of autism. Quote, "But even the authors of that review says you can't establish any sort of causality from those studies," says Dennis Kuo, a pediatrician at the University of Rochester Medical Center in New York. A large study published in JAMA last year found no association between acetaminophen during pregnancy and autism, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or intellectual disability. In that study of nearly 2.5 million children in Sweden, quote, "They verified the exposure to acetaminophen, they quantified the exposure, and they did very, very good follow-up," Kuo says. When the researchers compared siblings, one with autism and one without, any connection between acetaminophen during a mother's pregnancy and a later autism diagnosis disappeared. "That comparison was key," Kuo says, "because it suggests that other factors, not acetaminophen, were behind the purported link." Quote, "There's no association," end quote. Even if such an association consistently turned up, that link wouldn't necessarily mean that acetaminophen causes autism, says Noor Pervez, a community engagement manager at the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network, a nonprofit organization based in Washington, D.C. "For one thing, autism is strongly genetic. What's more, autistic people are at higher risk of certain health conditions that come with chronic pain, such as migraine," Pervez points out. Quote, "Autistic parents are more likely than non-autistic parents to have autistic children," Pervez says. Quote, "So it is possible that parents with autistic traits are more likely than non-autistic parents to take Tylenol during pregnancy, and it is the parent's autism, not the medicine, that contributes to a greater likelihood that the child will be autistic. Rhetoric that blames a parent for autism is harmful," Kuo says. Quote, "Autism is not something that a parent did or didn't do," end quote. Pervez points out the harm such messages can cause. Quote, "Parents will think their actions are to blame for a child's disability," he says. Quote, "This is both not true and promotes stigma about autism, end quote. And reducing autism to a single cause is not realistic. Quote, it's so complex, and there's so many factors that could potentially go into it. Quo says, claiming to have found a simple cause, quote, is just not giving all of the research that's already been done the attention it needs, end quote. In his remarks, President Trump told pregnant women to, quote, tough it out, end quote. Quote, don't take Tylenol, he said over and over. Quote, there's no downside, end quote. But there is. Acetaminophen is one of the few options available to pregnant people for pain and fever, both of which can bring medical dangers. Stephen J. Fleischman, president of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, noted in a statement, quote, the conditions people use acetaminophen to treat during pregnancy are far more dangerous than any theoretical risks and can create severe morbidity and mortality for the pregnant person and the fetus, end quote. Fevers during pregnancy also have been tied to increased risk of disorders, including autism and schizophrenia. What's more, foregoing pain relief will lead to suffering, Pervez points out. Quote, these claims will also lead some pregnant people, including pregnant autistic people, to needlessly suffer by convincing them that the painkiller most commonly used during pregnancy is not safe, end quote. Also in the September 22nd announcement, the nation's top health officials pointed to a drug that they claim will treat autism symptoms, also with no evidence to back it up. The drug, called leucovorin, will be relabeled to treat people with autism who may have too little folate getting into their brain. Quote, we have a duty to let doctors and the public know we're going to change the label to make it available, U.S. Food and Drug Administration Commissioner Marty McHarry said in a news briefing. Quote, hundreds of thousands of kids, in my opinion, will benefit, end quote. Widespread treatment of children with this drug, which is a form of folinic acid, is premature, says Kevin Klatt, an expert in folate science at the University of California, Berkeley. Quote, I would say don't kill the hypothesis, but it's early stage research, he cautions. Studies that have been done with autistic children so far have been small, and mainly from one group of researchers, Klatt says. There have been no large clinical trials conducted on leucovorin. Quote, to be serious about this, they should put $10 million behind a large randomized controlled trial, multi-center, Klatt says, quote, or have a call for those applications and have people go in and really say, does this hold any promise, end quote. Rushing this drug out may, quote, provide false hope, Klatt says. Quote, I've already seen pregnant women in my DMs asking me about, how do I get folinic acid, end quote. He's concerned that people will seek out unregulated folate supplements, also called vitamin B9, that may claim to do the same thing as leucovorin. The process behind this change is flawed, Klatt says. Quote, it's like, well, if you really love science so much, why are you trying to take an experimental therapy with a signal for maybe it will do something and mainstream it in American medicine, end quote. Beyond the dearth of scientific and medical evidence, the announcement heavily framed the idea of autism as an, quote, epidemic, end quote, one that is in desperate need of a solution. This lens ignores what many autistic people need, Pervez says, quote, by focusing on cure rhetoric, we've effectively seen people ignore the last 30 plus years in autism research. Autistic people, generally speaking, don't want a cure. We want to be able to live our lives in our communities as part of them. We don't get there by ignoring our wishes and treating us existing as inherently bad, end quote. And next from the news of health and medicine, why are so many young people getting cancer? Scientists don't know yet, but diet, gut bacteria, and microplastics could play a role, by Fred Schwaller. Ryan Decembrino knew something was seriously wrong when he began experiencing constant abdominal pain. 5 years ago, the 29-year-old in Philadelphia went to the doctor. At that doctor's insistence, Decembrino underwent a colonoscopy, which found a dozen polyps, but the other doctor who oversaw the scan, quote, wasn't very concerned because cancer didn't run in my family, Decembrino recalls. he was due to come back in 3 years for a follow-up. But 2 years later, the pain got so severe he insisted that doctors take it seriously. A colonoscopy found a tumor in his colon. He went in for surgery and chemotherapy right away. Quote, "If I would have waited until my 3-year follow-up, I wouldn't be here today," he says. Now, DeSambrino advocates for cancer awareness. Quote, "We have to get the word out," he says. Quote, "Cancer can happen to anyone," end quote. Cancer is typically a disease of older people. In the United States, about 88% of cancer cases are among those over 50. Of the roughly 2 million people in the country diagnosed with cancer annually, less than 100,000 people are between 15 and 39. But since the 1990s, rates of early onset cancer diagnosed before the age of 50 have been rapidly increasing globally. One major study found that the global incidence of early onset cancer increased by 79% between 1990 and 2019, while deaths rose by 28%. Another study published in the Lancet Public Health last year found that the incidence of 17 cancers in the United States has risen steadily among young people and women, particularly among those born after 1990. The steepest rises were seen in cancers of the small intestine and pancreas, says study co-author Hyuna Sung, a cancer epidemiologist at the American Cancer Society in Atlanta. Lack of historical data in many countries makes it difficult to pinpoint when these trends really began, Sung says. But people born after the 1990s are 4 times more likely to be diagnosed with rectal cancer than those born around 1950. Compared with 2019, the global incidence of early onset cancers is projected to rise by 31%. By 2030, and deaths will go up by 21%. Millennials and Gen Zers will carry disproportionate cancer risks with them as they age, quote, potentially slowing decades of progress against cancer, Sung says. The data reflect what oncologist Alok Khurana sees in his practice at the Cleveland Clinic. Older adults still make up a majority of cancer cases, but Karana is seeing more otherwise healthy young people without family histories of cancer. Quote, "It's a question we're all asking," he says. Quote, "Why are we seeing more and more younger people in our clinics? And why are they presenting cancers at more advanced stages?" End quote. Scientists are researching those questions, but don't yet know the answers. Better cancer surveillance and screening methods don't fully explain this rise, Sung says. It can't account for, quote, "this kind of broad across-age effect of rapid and concentrated increases observed in certain cancers among younger adults," end quote. The leading hypothesis is that young people have been exposed to certain environmental and lifestyle factors that weren't prevalent before the 1990s. While some older people have been exposed to the same risks, researchers suspect that bioaccumulation of these factors from an early age exacerbates the risks of early onset cancer. Potential factors include changes to the gut microbiome and rising exposures to antibiotics, microplastics, and, quote, "forever," end quote, chemicals known collectively as PFAs. Researchers are also investigating links between cancer and the spread of the Western diet and rising obesity rates. Quote, but if there had been one risk factor, we would have identified it by this point, says Sonia Kupfer, a gastroenterologist and cancer expert at the University of Chicago Medical Center. It, quote, "makes you think that it's probably a combination of a number of different factors," end quote. Is cancer related to diet? Some epidemiologists' evidence points to obesity being a key risk factor for early onset cancers. An analysis of 21 cancers in 25 to 49-year-olds between 2000 and 2012 found global increases in colon, rectal, pancreatic, and kidney cancers may be partly explained by increases in excess body weight. But the link between obesity and cancer isn't clear-cut. One U.S.-based study did not show an association between obesity rates and the development of early onset colorectal cancer between 1995 and 2015. Rather than obesity itself being the problem, Khurana thinks certain aspects of modern diets, particularly the Western diet, might be the key cause. He points to a high intake of ultra-processed foods, sugar, and red meat. Quote, "The more components of the Western diet, the greater the risk of early onset colorectal cancer," he says. A 2022 review study in Frontiers in Nutrition linked a diet high in fat, deep fried foods, refined sugars, foods and sugary drinks, and desserts with higher rates of colorectal cancer in young people. On the other hand, a protective effect was observed for people who eat healthy diets of more fruits and vegetables. So far, scientists haven't been able to pin down how any individual dietary component might spur cancer, but lab studies are beginning to show how sugar, saturated fat, high fructose corn syrup, and other ingredients might influence the growth of colorectal tumors. A 2022 study in mice, for example, found that high-fat diets altered the body's gut microbiome and metabolism in ways that increase the chances of cancer-related gene mutations popping up when cells divide. Whether this happens in humans is unknown. It's hard to pin down how diet influences cancer, Khurana says, because, quote, "there are too many factors to capture in studies," end quote. Could microplastics cause cancer? Another area of interest is in certain materials that have become more commonly used over the last decades. These include environmental chemicals as well as microplastics that now permeate the environment, including the air we breathe, and that have even been found in the human body. Per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, PFAs for short, are found in a range of products that people come in contact with, such as textiles and food packaging. PFAS, PFAS, are, quote, "suspected," end quote, to be linked to cancers at all ages. Sung says several studies have found associations between PFAS in drinking water, air, and work environments with cancers in different organs. However, studies are yet to specifically investigate the link between PFAS and the rise in early onset cancers. Similarly, the evidence that microplastics cause early onset cancers is, quote, "weak but increasing," says Frank Frizzell, a colorectal surgeon at the University of Otago in New Zealand. Global plastic production increased from around 120 million metric tons in 1990 to over 460 million tons in 2023, which coincides with the rising incidence of early onset cancer. When plastics degrade, they create micro and nanoplastics that can be ingested and inhaled. Microplastics have been found in the majority of organs in the body and in cancer tumors, quote, "in higher levels than normal tissue. But it is just an association for now and not cause and effect," Frizzell says. "These plastic particles, defined as being less than 5 millimeters across, are inert," Frizzell says. "But it's possible they ferry viruses or bacteria that can cause cancer into our bodies. For instance, human papillomavirus, or HPV, has been linked to cervical and throat cancers." Other researchers question whether microplastics really are inert. How mammalian cells respond to plastic is not well understood. Laboratory studies in mice indicate microplastics can cause inflammation, a well-known promoter of cancer. But the lab studies to date have not looked at the health effects of years of microplastics accumulating in rodents, which makes it hard to glean much insight into how they might cause early onset cancers in humans. Is cancer linked to gut health? Colorectal cancer is now the leading cause of cancer death in American men under 50 and the second leading cause for women. The incidence of early onset colorectal cancers has also risen in 27 of 50 countries and territories, analyzed in a study published in January. The steep rise, particularly in those under the age of 40, has led to a lot of research making colorectal cancer among the better studied early onset cancers and at the leading edge of understanding causes. Given the link between gut health and gut microbes, it's perhaps not surprising that scientists suspect diet, microplastics, and environmental chemicals may promote early onset colorectal cancer by influencing the gut microbiome, the ecosystem of bacteria and other microbes that live in the intestines. Observational studies point to environmental exposures and dietary changes since the 1990s that allow certain species of gut bacteria to dominate the bowels. Several species, including Fusobacterium, E. faecalis, Colibactin-producing E. coli, S. galloiticus, and B. fragilis, have been linked with cancer in different parts of the digestive tract. Now, researchers are zeroing in on how these harmful bacteria might trigger early onset cancer. A study published in April in Nature put the blame on a certain bacterial toxin. Researchers studied colon cells from 981 patients with colorectal cancer in 11 countries. A certain pattern of cancer-causing genetic mutations was more than three times as common in early onset cases than in later onset ones. The researchers found that this pattern coincided with childhood exposure to Colibactin. Quote, "These mutation patterns are a kind of historical record in the genome, and they point to early life exposure to Colibactin as a driving force behind early onset disease," says Ludmil Alexandrov, a computational biologist at the University of California, San Diego, who led the study. If someone acquires these mutations as a child, they could be decades ahead of schedule for developing colorectal cancer, getting it at age 40 instead of 60, he says. Alberto Bardelli, a molecular geneticist at the University of Torino and the AIRC Institute of Molecular Oncology, Milan, says the study shows a, quote, "beautiful correlation," end quote, between the mutational signature of Colibactin and early onset colorectal cancers. But he says we need to understand the causes and mechanisms of early onset colorectal cancer. It's possible the food children eat, as well as their lifestyles and immune systems, could give rise to Colibactin-producing E. coli toxins. But it's not well understood. What's more, Colibactin exposure explains perhaps only 15% of early onset cases, according to previous studies, which means many more mechanisms are yet to be discovered. Do early onset tumors grow more quickly? A complete understanding of the causes of early onset cancers won't come anytime soon, so scientists are also working to come up with better ways to diagnose cancers in young people much earlier. One reason younger people tend to be diagnosed with cancer at a late stage is because early onset tumors might progress more quickly than tumors in older adults. Bardelli is one of several scientists who hypothesize that early onset cancers might not follow the same timeline of progression as typical cancers. Scientists have mapped the molecular alterations that typically cause colorectal cancer. Evidence indicates it takes 5 to 15 years for tumors to develop, invade, and metastasize. But Bardelli has started to look into the pace of growth in early onset colorectal cancers, and they seem to advance much faster, perhaps in 1 to 2 years. If true, it could make the typical 5 to 7 year screening gaps much less effective for younger people, he says. Bardelli is trying to develop ways to determine how long a tumor has been growing by studying tumor age in lots of people with early onset cancers. Doctors would be able to figure out how often to screen for it and know which tumors are, quote, "born to be bad," end quote, are fast developing and require aggressive treatment. Other researchers are trying to find ways to identify people likely to develop early onset cancers, then send them for screenings. The idea is to use other kinds of tools besides symptoms to create risk prediction models. If someone has unexplained anemia or weight loss, these are warning signs, says Kupfer, the gastroenterologist at the University of Chicago. However, she says these attempts are, quote, aspirational because scientists haven't yet identified the biological causes of early onset cancers or how to score the risk factors we know. There is low-hanging fruit, she says, like trying to identify cases based on family history, but, quote, we do a really bad job of identifying those people, and so we wait often until a cancer develops in the family, until someone says, oh, wait a second, end quote. What should younger people do to reduce cancer risk? Because research into early onset cancer is still in its infancy, medical experts don't yet have specific recommendations for how young adults can reduce their risks of developing most cancers. Getting vaccinated against HPV can help reduce the risks of cervical and throat cancers, and there is some evidence that the hepatitis B vaccines help prevent liver cancer. Aside from that, the best advice is to follow the basics of a healthy lifestyle, eating a balanced diet, exercising, and limiting alcohol, smoking, and sun exposure. Decembrino says being aware of the signs of cancer and knowing your own body is the best thing you can do. But because early onset cancer is still not the norm, many young adults describe a grave challenge being taken seriously by doctors. Samantha Rose Evans, an administrator in Lincolnshire, England, was diagnosed and treated for endometrial cancer at the age of 26 only because her then-fiancé encouraged her to seek medical help about her irregular periods. Quote, my previous doctors had told me I shouldn't be concerned, she says. One survey in the UK, Australia, and New Zealand found that young people with colorectal cancer perceived doctors to not suspect cancer because of their age, which contributed to delays in treatment. A common issue is misdiagnosis of cancer-related symptoms as more benign health issues. In a U.S. survey of nearly 900 people with early onset colorectal cancer, 54% of patients were initially misdiagnosed, usually with hemorrhoids. Quote, 36% of patients saw three or more doctors before receiving a diagnosis of colorectal cancer, says Michael Sapienza, CEO of the nonprofit Colorectal Cancer Alliance in Washington, D.C., which led the survey. Rosalind Holden, 38, assistant principal of a school in London, had to be, quote, an absolute pain in the arse, end quote, to her doctors 2 years ago to get rapid medical attention for uterine cancer, which has an average age at diagnosis of 60. Quote, if anything worries you, especially women's health like heavy periods, get it checked, she says. The hysterectomy to treat her cancer stopped her family planning in its tracks. Quote, if I had gone to the doctor sooner, would the treatment have been different so it wouldn't have impacted my ability to have another child? End quote. The success story buried in the gloomy data is that scientists have made tremendous strides reducing overall cancer mortality. Improved screening and treatment methods have dramatically lowered cancer rates in older populations for many cancers, Corona says. Austria and Italy have already been screening populations in their 40s for colorectal cancer. A 2019 study shows both nations bucking the trend for rising colorectal cancer rates in people aged 40 to 49, though not for those under 40. In the United States, the American Cancer Society recommended lowering the screening age for bowel cancers from 50 to 45 in 2018, but it's too soon to know if this helped catch cancers at younger ages. Spreading awareness among both the general population and physicians is vital for catching cancers early, says Kupfer. The most useful advocacy has been around making people aware of their symptoms, she says, so they know that rectal bleeding might not be hemorrhoids, but colorectal cancer. In the 3 weeks following the Colorectal Cancer Alliance's Lead From Behind screening awareness campaign featuring Ryan Reynolds, quote, appointments for colonoscopies increased by 36%, Sapienza says, according to the digital healthcare marketplace ZocDoc. The Alliance State of Screening survey revealed that 57% of Americans are unaware that colonoscopies can prevent colorectal cancer by removing precancerous polyps. Quote, if they knew this, 98% reported they would be more likely to undergo the screening, Sapienza says. Evans, Holden, and DeSambrino all say, one of the challenges dealing with cancer is the difficulty finding stories from people closer to their age. That's why they're all involved in support programs for young people going through cancer. Quote, cancer sucks, DeSambrino says. Quote, the only way I got through it was by having great people around me. I'm part of a buddy program now, but thankfully I haven't needed to be called up yet. End quote. And now from the News of Neuroscience. Lung cancer plugs into the mouse brain. New research adds to growing evidence that the nervous system plays a role in cancer growth, by Laura Sanders. Once in the brain, lung cancer cells can plug themselves into the electrical circuitry there and grow, a study of mice shows. The results, published September 10th in Nature, highlight the deep and mysterious connections between cancer and the brain. Quote, it's beautiful work, says neuroimmunologist Sebastian Talbot of Queen's University in Kingston, Canada. Quote, it was very interesting to see how these tumors get reprogrammed, and that allows them to actually form this electrical connection with brain neurons. End quote. Small cell lung cancer is a particularly aggressive cancer that starts in the lung and all too often spreads to the brain. Quote, when things start metastasizing, that's when patients start really going downhill, says study co-author Hamsa Venkatesh, a cancer neuroscientist at Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard Medical School. Quote, clinically, there are really not a lot of options to treat these metastases. End quote. Understanding the complex relationships between the nervous system and cancer cells may yield new ways to slow or prevent cancers, perhaps by targeting nerve cell activity. The nervous system has been implicated in other types of cancer, including breast, skin, gastric, and pancreatic, Venkatesh says. Quote, whichever cancer that's been looked at, honestly, you name it, and the nerves are physically in that microenvironment and play some role in modulating tumor growth, she says. In their new study, the researchers looked at small cell lung cancer in mice, severing the vagus nerve, a conduit that carries information between the brain and the rest of the body, dramatically slowed cancer growth in the lungs of mice, the researchers found. Quote, it was one of the most striking findings that I've had in my career, Venkatesh says. Quote, when we clipped that nerve, the tumors essentially just didn't grow, end quote. Next, the researchers turned to the brain, where they injected lung cancer cells to mimic cancer metastasis. The brain tumors that formed were laced with neurons, high-powered microscopy revealed. What's more, these neurons were electrically tethered to the cancer cells, forming cellular connections called synapses that move information from nerve cell to cancer cell. Most insidiously, this information included a, quote, grow, end quote, signal that led the cancer cells to multiply. The results highlight the parasitic nature of cancer, says neuroscientist and neuro-oncologist Michelle Manje, a co-author of the study and a Howard Hughes Medical Institute investigator at Stanford University. Quote, cancers tend not to invent anything new. They simply subvert and hijack mechanisms that are already at play, she says. Another study, also published September 10th in Nature, bolsters the idea that connections between neurons and tumor cells matter. Changes in genes important for synapses and neural communication seem to help small cell lung cancer thrive, researchers found. An epilepsy drug called levetiracetam that dampens neurons' electrical activity curbed the cancer cells' growth in the mice's brains. Further experiments revealed other drugs or even devices that reduce neural activity might prove promising against cancer's spread, a direction Venkatesh and her colleagues are eager to pursue. I think we'll certainly get there, she says, but cautions, quote, it's just that we are really just very, very early on, end quote. And now our last article for today from the News of Animals. Tug or fetch, some dogs sort toys by how they are used, mentally sorting toys by function, whether without physical or verbal cues, shows complex thinking, by Jennifer S. Holland. Quote, where's your red ball? Get your squeaky chicken. End quote. Some dogs know their favorite toys by name. Now, it turns out that dogs with a knack for learning words are also capable of mentally labeling toys just by how they are used during play. A new study suggests these dogs can even classify a new toy based entirely on its use without any verbal or physical clues. The findings, published September 18th in Current Biology, add to the growing list of compellingly complex cognitive activities at work in the canine brain. Quote, this work came about after a dog in another study not only generalized her own toys into categories like ball, rope, and ring, but could also sort toys she'd never seen before into those categories, says Claudia Fugazza, an animal behavior researcher at Eötvös-Loránd University in Budapest. Quote, we wanted to test whether dogs could also classify a toy based strictly on how it is used during play rather than on shared physical traits, end quote. The specific dogs in question are known as gifted word learners, pet dogs. Many of them border collies, famed for their extensive vocabulary of toy names learned spontaneously during at-home play. For the new study, Fugazza and her colleagues recruited 11 gifted word learners and their owners. Seven dogs ultimately completed the project. The studies took place in each dog's home environment. As a first step, owners played games labeled either, quote, throw, end quote, or, quote, pull, end quote, basically fetch or tug of war with their dogs using a range of toys, from squeakers to ropes to plushies, while naming the activity aloud. Toys were randomly assigned a category. Their physical traits did not dictate their use. Once the dog successfully connected each toy to its spoken function, owners and dogs played either throw or pull with novel items, this time without the owners naming the activities aloud. Finally, owners asked their dogs to, quote, bring me a pull, end quote, or, quote, bring me a throw, end quote, from the toy pile to test whether the dogs would apply the labels to the new toys based solely on their play experience with the items. Correct picks of novel toys would suggest that the dogs were generalizing functional labels from the old to the new. Overwhelmingly, they picked right. On average, from a pile including both old and new toys, the dogs selected the appropriate novel toy in 31 out of 48 trials, despite never having heard the categories named aloud in reference to those items. Most, quote, mistakes, end quote, occurred when a dog chose an old pull or throw toy whose label had been verbalized during earlier training. Previous investigations into whether animals can categorize objects by function relied on heavily trained captive animals. Quote, this is the first study exploring this cognitive skill in animals in their natural environment. In the case of dogs at home playing naturally with their owners, Fugazza says. Earlier research also didn't untangle physical or other cues the dogs might be using from functional ones. The new study ensured that the dogs relied on one dynamic, social cues, how their owners played with a toy. Looking to human infants for comparison, the dog's functional labeling skill is about on par with that of a toddler. Quote, the fact that this learning happened naturally, not in a lab with thousands of training trials, suggests that dogs' ability to infer function from context is both more sophisticated and more ecologically valid than we've appreciated, says Vanessa Woods, an evolutionary anthropologist at Duke University and director of a project called the Duke Puppy Kindergarten. Quote, it demonstrates that dogs are not only memorizing labels, but can also flexibly use them in a way that reflects deeper categorization, end quote. Future studies may explore what other mental categories the dogs can create and the brain mechanisms involved. Quote, it's exciting to see dogs recognizing, remembering, inferring, Fugazza says. Quote, it takes a lot of cognitive processing to do what they're doing. End quote. Based on the fact that her subjects were gifted word learners, her, quote, ambassadors to understanding dog cognition, end quote, as she calls them, Fugazza can't say all dogs have this functional labeling skill, quote, but I wouldn't exclude that possibility, end quote. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Bill Shaw with Science News. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library.